Welcome to another episode of Routes Through Pokemon Adventures. I'm Shaylock.
I'm Ruby.
And together we are a father-daughter duo journeying through the main series video games of Pokemon, as well as the anime and the Pokemon Adventures manga. And this week we will be covering manga volume 8, chapters 97, 98, and 99. And for the anime, they will be episodes 129 or 11 of season 3 through episode 133 or episode 15 of season 3. But before we get started, let's go ahead and catch up with what we've been doing outside of the show. So last time we recorded, we had just finished VBS week, and then Ruby had a trip to go on to do more VBS stuff, so I lost my partner, so we didn't record that week, and then right after that, everybody got back home from camps and other things, as well as my wife and our youngest kiddos, and just in time to prepare for fair week. But now we've gotten through the fair, which is exciting, because we have a couple weeks of downtime, so we should be able to get a couple episodes recorded, hopefully. Although we have some special events taking place a little bit in there, birthdays and whatnot. But going to the fair was a lot of fun, because, I mean, it was fun just for rides and all that stuff. But it's also a great place to do some Pokemon Go, so I spent a lot of Pokestops, and there's a couple of gyms there that I kept taking over and fighting over. There was one that took me forever, but I was waiting on kids in line to get balloon animals, so I had plenty of time to just keep fighting the people that kept healing their Pokemon in the one red gym, and I had plenty of, like, I have way too many max revives and stuff, but I'm just like, whatever, I'll just keep doing this for a while, till they get bored.
Yeah, I didn't get a balloon animal, but that line I know can take forever.
Yep, it does. But I had something to entertain myself, so. Definitely caught a few new Pokemon, like a few shiny Pokemon, so that's been nice. Oh, while we were at the fair, we also took on a Moltres, I think? Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the kids didn't have one yet, so we got to team up and take care of that, so that was a ton of fun. Yeah, and then some of the kids did different projects, some Lego stuff, Flame. My oldest, he also made a board game based off of Tag, so that was kind of fun. Other than that, though, we haven't done any more Violet and Scarlet or Horizons.
Violet and Scarlet just sounds weird to say it that way.
Scarlet or Violet, whatever.
That's just how I've always heard it. It's kind of weird to hear Violet and Scarlet.
So while Ruby was gone, too, we had a birthday party right before the fair week started, and I caught myself a black Rayquaza, which was super exciting. I don't even know much about Rayquaza, but I knew that there was this cooler version, because I think, I talked to Frank about it one time, too. He really likes it, and, like, it's one of his favorite shiny Pokemon. But then, you know, Horizons has made a big deal about hunting the black Rayquaza, so.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing a lot of raids looking for that thing, and I finally found it, so that made me super happy. But I think that's about it. That's what we've been have going on, just a very busy summer that's finally wrapping up on the busy side of things, so we can chill for a couple weeks before to go back to my real job, since I was on leave for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess now we can jump into our manga chapters. So we are on manga volume 8, which is the first volume in the gold and silver box set. And chapter 97, Ruby's favorite, Bellsprout Route. In fact, this whole Routes Through Pokemon episode is going to be a top one for Ruby, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, what we have here is Silver entering Bellsprout Tower, and he's having a conversation with someone on his watch, it seems, and we don't know who that might be. Could be Green again, because they've talked that way before. The tower has a bunch of gears turning, too, like a clock tower, which I thought was cool, and different than what we see in the actual game. But anyway, he's standing with the Totodile, and the voice on his watch says whether or not it evolves, assuming Totodile is what they're talking about, is entirely up to Silver's skill, and he says that he understands this. Then we see Gold sneaking in through an upper floor of the of the Sprout Tower looking for silver. So this must have been where that person had seen him going, the one that Gold was talking to before. He's like, oh, I did see this person. He went that way or whatever. Because he was interrogating the criminal, because obviously the criminal must know because they're both criminals. But then it turned out like some other guy did see. But when Gold goes in, instead of finding silver, he runs into a bunch of monk people, like a bunch of people that look like monks. And they think he's there to join them, and they're going to shave his head. And we've already learned about how much he likes his stylized hair. Gold does not like this idea very much at all, and they say only trainees can enter the building, and so or at least that floor, and so he has no choice, and they're going to force him to join their group. And so then they send out their Bellsprout. Mm-hmm. And the Bellsprout have weird attack formations where they stack themselves in like pyramids and things. And the Pokedex mentions that their thin bodies make them very quick. Gold fumbles a Pokeball, and it ends up under a stack of broken wood or something. Then Gold asks them what other formations they can do, and then tricks them into stacking into one tall tower while they're right on top of that broken wood. And suddenly Cyndaquil pops out and burns them all in one attack. Smart move, Gold. On the next floor, Gold meets a sage and learns that the whole tower is for training. The first floor, to study knowledge. The second floor, to train in battle. And the third floor is to hone oneself. Others are up there too, and Gold says he's going to describe the person he is after one more time. When he does, the sage points over to a door where Silver is walking through and asks if Gold means it's someone like him. Exactly him! Totodile is out. Sneasel is hugging Silver's leg, and Silver is holding a Pokeball. Then when Gold comes after him, Silver tells Totodile to slash. The floor breaks underneath Gold, Expo, and Abo, but Abo catches the edge, and Gold and Expo grab hold of Gold's...
Abo grabs the edge, and then Gold grabs on Abo, and Expo's hanging onto Gold's leg.
Okay, so, and Gold grabs onto Abo, and Expo is holding onto Gold's leg, and they clamber back up. And then Cyndaquil and Totodile charge toward one another. And that brings us to chapter 98, Totodile Rock. Have you ever heard the song Crocodile Rock?
I think I have. I think you've played it before me before.
Oh, probably. Anyway, I'm sure that's where this title comes from. So Totodile chomps down on Cyndaquil's head. Game over. Cyndaquil's dead. Just kidding.
That'd be devastating.
And yeah, it
the
would.
Only person... or Pokemon, I mean, who deserves to be chomped on the head and die, is Bellsprout. And there's a whole ton of them, so I don't understand what Totodile is doing.
Poor Bellsprout.
Poor Bellsprout.
Yeah, you're very mean.
Poor me.
So Totodile eventually douses Expo with some water, and Silver mentions that Totodile is a perfect match against Cyndaquil. And Gold argues that he knows, but Expo's desire to bring Totodile back and his emotions must count for something. Silver mentions there are physical realities to consider, and Gold insists that while hard to quantify, and it is not something one can find in textbooks, emotion is real. And so now we got two opposing ideas, just like Red and Blue had in the first series, and then they kind of met, like they both learned from each other by the end of it.
What are their opposing ideas?
One says that we have to... Silver's like, hey, you gotta be aware of the physical realities. Like, water beats fire. Whereas Gold's like, hey, their spirit and their passion count for something. Their emotions matter. And can overcome some of the physical restraints.
I agree with both.
Exactly. They need to meet in the middle, just like Red and Blue did. The water on the flames creates smoke. And so Expo uses smoke screen. Then Gold tries to have Totodile come along and with him... come along with him, and gets bitten for his effort. Silver claims that Cyndaquil is a weak Pokemon and that Totodile wants to stay with Silver so it can be stronger, instead of relying on silly tricks. Then spikes come out of the wall, and Silver and Gold dodge them just as a large ball drops from the ceiling. Silver says there is no time to dodge that, and so they catch it instead. They argue that Gold's smoke caused the training mechanism of the tower to activate, and Silver broke the floor so they have no escape as they try to resist the ball. So they're both blaming each other for how they're stuck in the situation they are in. One caused the situation, the other caused no escape. Then Cyndaquil signals to Totodile, and the two work together to destroy the ball, with Expo heating it up, and then Totodile charging up and ice punching, and then using Ice Punch and cracking it to pieces. Before they finish, both Gold and Silver realize what's happening at the same time, but Gold shouts out that he gets it, while Silver simply thinks it more calmly. So, like, Gold's like, oh, I get what they're doing! Well, Silver doesn't have to state this out loud. He's just like, oh, yeah, no, I see what they're doing. Mm. In his head. He doesn't need to prove anything.
In this Gold does. Particular situation, I feel more like Silver. Like, when we're watching a movie or something, I'm like, oh, that makes sense, and that leads to that. And then my little brother's like, ah, I know what it is, or I knew it!
Yep. So, but yeah, I also think that Flame is, again, we've compared him before, very much like Gold. So, again, we have Gold doing his thing, and I personally am more of the Silver type, where I think it in my head. Gold can tell those two Pokemon must have been raised by a scientist, and then Gold offers thanks to Totodile, only to find the Pokemon and Silver are already gone. Then, outside the tower, Silver makes contact with whoever he was talking to before. At least, it seems so. And he pulls out his Pokedex and says, mission accomplished. Totodile has evolved into Croconaw. And we see the evolved Pokemon in the panel. And then we get to Chapter 99, Sunken Treasure. So we are now at Goldenrod City, which is not even close to where we are at in the game. But it is a city in the game. And in the Pokemon Society headquarters, we have people discussing the need for stricter requirements for gym leadership after Lieutenant Surge and Sabrina were suspected of working with Team Rocket 3 years ago. So this confirms the story we are in now takes place about a year after the Elite Four stuff, as that took place 2 years after Red's journey through Kanto and dealing with Team Rocket. They also mention that the whereabouts of two of the other gym leaders suspected to be involved with Team Rocket have gone missing. This would be Koga and Giovanni. Those two gyms are continuing to run without a leader. The person talking says that gym leaders are entrusted with bringing up the levels of all trainers in a region, and then has a proposal so that won't happen in Johto. But some dude pipes up and says they were only suspected and that there is no proof. He adds that Team Rocket has dissolved and that the new Vermilion and Saffron gym leaders are performing their duties admirably, which means Lieutenant Surge and Sabrina must not be fulfilling their duties anymore like Giovanni had sent them to do. We learn that two of the gyms are empty, right? But also mention that Saffron has a new leader, which was Sabrina's gym, and Vermilion has a new leader, which was Surge's gym. So they replaced them, but they haven't replaced the other ones yet.
Yep.
So then, this doofus simply thinks they should be worrying about filling the positions of the Fuchsia and Viridian City gyms instead of worrying about Team Rocket being a problem, because it's only suspected. He then tells the original speaker that he should stick to his lane and just restore the Pokemon storage system, and that's when we learn that the first speaker, with his Vulpix, is Bill. So Bill's back, woohoo! Which means he is definitely aware of the activities of the Team Rocket gym leaders, because he was caught up in all that chaos. We cut back to Gold, and he thinks it is crazy they are still chasing Silver and Totodile, as they are tough. Gold is sworn to it, but he realizes it might not be Expo's fight, and offers to take him back to Professor Elm so he doesn't have to keep fighting his friend. Gold also recognizes that he's doubting if he's doing the right thing, and that might be part of the reason he and Expo are clicking as well as aren't clicking as well as Silver and the Totodile. But then they decide to get a nap and are suddenly hit by a rush of wind and Sunkern. The Pokedex mentions their jumping ability and something about Spearow attacking it, I think. What does it say?
Extraordinary jumping at when attacked by Spearow, snake shakes violently when.
Oh, that's right. It wasn't a complete entry.
Mm-hmm. Because of the page. It is a complete entry on
there. Right. We just can't see it all. So Gold lays back down and says they can also ruin a perfectly good nap, as his own part of the Pokedex entry. Mm-hmm. And then two flying Pokemon are around and someone calls out for their return, so we know they are a Pidgeotto and a Noctowl. The Noctowl rests on this person's shoulder and Gold recognizes him and can't remember where right away. Then he recalls that this person was the cop. He's not dressed like a cop right now, but the same cop that took the info for the picture of Silver, the one that Gold lied about and so that it was drawn funny so nobody would find them, because he wants to be the one to find them. So the guy introduces himself and says his name is Faulkner, which was the same name as the flying type gym leader in Violet City, which is also where Gold just left. So it's kind of exciting that they brought in this cop guy that seemed kind of just a character just for that moment, right? Like, not standing out, really. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it's Faulkner, the gym leader from the game, at least. As we learn, he's not a gym leader yet, because he mentions the Violet City gym, wondering if Gold passed by it, and says that it has no gym leader at the moment, because it was run by Faulkner's father, who had to go into hiding for some reason. So there's some kind of interesting mystery there. But Faulkner is training so he can pass the gym leader exam and then run the gym himself. He says it is his goal, which gets Gold to thinking about Silver's goal and how he didn't seem to steal Totodile just to sell it. So what is he up to? Because he doesn't know what Silver's goal is. He's trying to figure it out now.
Mm-hmm.
The wind returns, and it turns out it is brought in by some new kind of bird Pokemon with a body like steel. Skarmory! And that's why Faulkner is out there, because he's investigating it. The Sunkern, I think they even say it's a new type of Pokemon, so like, I don't even think they give a name for us in the manga yet, but we recognize it. The Sunkern return, maybe fleeing this creature. Faulkner's birds go back out to fight the Skarmory, but they can't deal the deciding blow because of its steel body, and so he tries to think what is good against metal. He runs through a list, and when he mentions heat, Gold is there and ready to use X-Bow. It is interesting that Faulkner mentions a new kind of bird Pokemon or something along those lines, and it is steel, and they don't know what to do with that yet, as if it is a new Pokemon type to look into as well. Which is cool, since steel is a new Pokemon type from Gold and Silver. It wasn't in the original game.
Well, that is cool.
There's at least two new types that come in with Gold and Silver.
Is Fairy one of them?
Nope, that doesn't come until Generation 6.
Is it Ice?
No, Ice already existed. The other one that I know of is Dark. Gold says a Poolcue shot won't be enough to launch Cyndaquil up to the Skarmory, and so he quickly catches a Sunkern and asks if it wants to help deal with the Skarmory.
Well, Gold uses Abel, and Abel's tail just grabs one of the Sunkerns and puts it in a Pokeball.
Oh, right. But yeah, yes, if he wants to help with Skarmory, which Gold seems to think it is excited to do, and therefore a Pokemon after his own heart. Because it's ready to go into action. Then he sends out the newly caught Sunkern and has X-Bow get on top and utilizes the Sunkern's leaping ability to get Cyndaquil high enough to turn on the heat. Then Faulkner says leave the rest to him. He catches the Skarmory, and then he says he has some more training to do for sure, together. And Gold then looks to X-Bow, and they decide they are going to continue after Totodile together and train a bit more too. Faulkner offers to train with him, but Gold can't. He has some jobs to do, so he has to keep on moving. And when he says this, he has Abel on his shoulders, X-Bow beside him, and on the other side, the Sunkern. So it looks like he might be at 3 Pokemon now, because all the other ones were stolen.
Didn't he get him back?
Well,
he just put him home.
Right. Right. So because the other ones are all back at home, so he's just been traveling with Abel and X-Bow. But now he has a Sunkern, it looks like. Faulkner says he knows about important missions, and then Gold leaves. As he's walking, Bill sees him and wonders about the boy having a Pokedex. But it is a distraction, as he needs to find Faulkner and let him know the date for the gym leader qualifying exam has been set. Then we see Professor Elm talking over a vid screen to his assistant, who is in Violet City still. The assistant says he can't find Gold, and the prof says keep looking. And the assistant is wondering why he wants to give something precious, like the mystery egg, to that reckless kid, to which Elm says, it needs to be around high-energy Pokemon and people, or something to that effect, and they figure Gold might be the best bet, which I would agree with. Mm-hmm. To be continued.
He makes Pokemon high-energy.
Yeah. And so now we're all caught up to where we were in the... Now we're all cut up to where we are in the video game. But instead of having an actual gym battle, there is no gym leader, so he had a weird, like, exchange with the gym leader and then moved on.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. And, I mean, we got the egg in Violet City, but it's after Violet City that the egg comes in, and so now they're trying to get the egg to gold.
Yep.
So I like how close it is paralleling, even if they're not winning badges right now. But now, it is time for the anime! So we will start with Season 3, Episode 11, Once in a Blue Moon, or Nuo to GS Boru, which is Nuo and the GS Ball, which means this Pokemon that we're about to meet must be called Nuo in Japan. And if we all remember from last episode, our Who's That Pokemon in that episode was Quagsire. So Nuo must be Quagsire's name in Japan, which makes me wonder what Wooper is. So Ash and company make it to another city before they are able to reach Violet City. So a bunch of cities that they hit, but this one is called Cherry Grove City, which is actually a city in the game this time.
Have we been to that one?
Yeah, it's between Violet City and New Barktown.
Oh, yeah. Wait, Violet City is the third town? Yeah. And they're still not there?
Right.
I realized that they haven't been there yet, but I didn't realize it was supposed to be so soon, and they're just like, that's... Wow.
So Ash is polishing the GS ball, and then he is told food is ready, so he leaves it right there on the bank next to the river, and a Quagsire pops out. Pikachu notifies the gang, and Misty decides she is going to catch this water Pokemon. She winds up her shot, and Psyduck comes out instead in another Psyduck sighting. Whenever Psyduck pops out of his ball when he's not supposed to, or we're not called upon. And he and Quagsire stare at one another for a while. Ash uses the Pokedex in here somewhere to learn that Quagsire have very slippery skin. Quagsire steals the GS Ball, and the gang rush to get it back, throwing in Pokemon to help, like Squirtle, who has a tough time grabbing Quagsire. They get the GS Ball back, and they get into trouble with Officer Jenny. So then back at the headquarters, they are talking to Oak, and he is apologizing for not letting Ash and them know about the Quagsire conservation, because you're not allowed to catch them around there, because they find fresh water for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny also explains that once a year, the Quagsire come down from Blue Moon Falls and take round things from town and bring them back to the falls. Then later, all the items come drifting back down the river and back to their owners, as well as fresh water. But I would assume that it's always fresh water, so that part confused me. The people in town think this is lucky, and the last item to come back is the luckiest of all.
As soon as that was said, I'm like, well, they're going to steal the GS ball, and then it'll be the last item to come down.
Yep. That's how these usually work.
So predictable.
The gang also see the Quagsire that took the GS ball lurking outside the window of Jenny's office or whatever, still wanting that GS ball. Yeah, he's funny. Then the gang are crossing a bridge and think they see it again, but it is a different Quagsire taking the orb that is part of the bridge. They stop to think about something for a minute, and then it shows that Pikachu is also thinking alongside them, and also a Quagsire standing there thinking along with them, like tapping his chin or whatever. Then they all realize it is the Quagsire, they all see the Quagsire and realize that it's the one that wants the GS Ball, and it jumps on Ash, who then throws out a Pokeball and calls out Chikorita.
It's funny that Quagsire just follows them.
It is. She gets angry to see Quagsire on top of Ash and hits him, and then tackles Ash and showers him with affection. They all realize that Chikorita apparently has a crush on Ash. But during all this, the GS Ball falls out of his randomly unzipped backpack, and the Quagsire gets it and swims up the river. So Ash and company decide they have to follow and get it back. Meanwhile, Meowth has found a shiny orb lawn ornament while Jesse is complaining about losing the twerps again. Meowth says there was a whole bunch of those round objects just laying in a field, which is where he got it. Jesse mentions that small minds are easily amused, and James chimes in to look at the ball as well, excited, showing that he must have a small mind as well, according to her at least. Because he wants to look at Meowth's treasure. He pretends to be a fortune teller over it, but then a face appears in the glass ball, which freaks them all out. And it's a Quagsire that takes the orb and swims off. So Jesse and James are going to send in their Pokemon, but Quagsire steal their Pokeballs too. Right out of their hands.
I like Quagsire. All the Pokemon that I used to be like, meh, now I like them more.
The sun is setting, and Ash and Co. are running up the river. But they are not having any luck, and Missy suggests maybe just waiting for the GS ball to float back down. But then they see other Quagsire and decide to follow them. Right behind them, Team Rocket comes running, and Meow thinks he just heard the twerps. But James says that it would be no use since they don't have their Pokemon. Like, that would help anyway. And Jesse has a Wicked Witch of the West line about getting them and that slimy Pokemon, too. Instead of, I'll get you and your little dog, too. At night, Ash and Co. find a bunch of Quagsire with their stolen treasures lounging around in a wider area of the river. Ash gets ready to capture the Quagsire with his GS ball, but they remind him he's not allowed to. So they agree to keep their eyes on the Quagsire instead. Then Team Rocket sees the twerps from their own hiding spot. They plan to capture all the Quagsire, of course. James seems afraid to try and is reluctantly pressured into it. I'm guessing because of his missing Pokemon is what why he was being so reluctant in trying to do anything. He was feeling lost without them. And Jesse also uses the phrase, "We're all in this together," which is one of the songs, I think. In one of the songs, isn't it?
I don't know. Maybe.
We're all in this together.
But for James, I think it's funny. He needs his Pokemon to get more confidence, and he needs that victory bell to eat him up, and then he can
think. Yep. All the Quagsire are holding their treasure and staring up at the sky as if they're waiting for something. Then a mechanical arm drops down and grabs a Quagsire, and again we get an interesting intro to the motto.
Prepare for trouble, because trouble's what we love.
Make that trouble double when we cause it from above. But then it becomes an irritating interruption as the Quagsire slips out and they try to get more, which also slip out. Because remember, they have very slippery skin. So Team Rocket goes for Plan B and uses a net to grab them all, including the one with the GS ball. The mechanical arms come again and grab Pikachu, but then the Quagsire that weren't caught start water gunning rocks or something up at Team Rocket. Then Bulbasaur razor leaves the net, freeing the rest, and one large rock from a Quagsire pops the Team Rocket balloon, and Team Rocket is blasting off again!
Ding! Ding.
The Quagsire start chanting, and then they swim upstream some more, so the gang follow. Now we reach a waterfall, and there is a blue moon above it. We get an instrumental version of one of the songs we hear on the jukebox sometimes. I think it's the one that goes, changes, changes, but I don't remember for sure. Anyway, the Quagsire are water gunning their items now, like they did with the rocks earlier, up the waterfall.
And the way they water gun them is they kind of like throw it in front of them and squirt it up.
Yeah. And the water sparkles off of everything in the moonlight. And the items wash down the fall and float back down the river. Then, the GS ball flies highest of them all. And all the Quagsire cheer it before it goes floating back down. And Ash and company have to chase it down again. When they really could have just waited. But then they wouldn't have got to see the spectacular show.
I was going to say, then they wouldn't get to see.
When all the items come back to Cherry Grove City, everyone is waiting for them from town. And they're waiting around on the bridge and land and everything, and they rush out to get their things. The GS ball starts floating by with no one to claim it. And a very exhausted Ash and company finally show up to claim it. And now, of course, I mean, by this time the sun is also rising, right? So, like, they've been doing this since yesterday afternoon into the evening. They haven't gone to sleep at all.
Yeah.
And so Ash will supposedly have the best luck of the year because the GS ball is his good luck charm, having been the last to show up. So he's ready to win the Johto League, but that's going to be tough if he never makes it to any gyms. And this week's Who's That Pokemon is Ledyba. All right, so for our tallying, we got a Psyduck sighting because Psyduck popped out instead of who Misty was planning on. We had a babysitting Brock moment. So because Brock flirts with Jenny and Missy drags him off by his backpack. We had an interesting intro, which we read for you, and then an irritating interruption because the motto was interrupted. While the Pokemon kept slipping out of the claws.
Yep.
And we'll do a final tally of all of that at the end. But now, we need to do our episode rankings. So, we've done 10 episodes of ranking so far, and currently we are at... The number one is a sappy ending, which is the Heracross episode. Then Double Trouble Header, which is Casey and the baseball stuff. Spinnerack Attack, where Team Rocket was the cat burglars, and there was Spinnerack everywhere. Illusion Confusion, the Hoot Hoot episode. The Chikorita Rescue, with Ash catches Chikorita. Snubble Snobbery, which is where we were introduced to Snubble. Don't Touch That Dial, which was the first episode of this season. The Little Bighorn, which was the Stantler illusion episode. Flower Power, with the dancing Bellossom. And Roll On Pokemon, which was the Don Fan episode. So our least favorite out of all of them is Roll On Pokemon, with our favorite being the Heracross episode. Where do you feel Once in a Blue Moon belongs?
Maybe above Don't Touch the Dial, something like that. I don't know, maybe like anywhere like above Snubble Snobbery, below Snubble Snobbery, or below Don't Touch That Dial.
Sure.
Something like that.
Yeah, I did like it. I think I liked it better than Snubble Snobbery. I liked Snubble and the potential that it'll come back, but there was a lot about that plot that was kind of a retread of the James Rich episode, mm-hmm. and the Snubble owner was ridiculous.
I definitely agree with that, I think, as I thought about it more. That sounded more likely.
All right, so our new number six is Once in a Blue Moon. All right, and then we can move on to our next episode, which is called The Whistle Stop, or Rediba no Fyu, or Rediba's Flute. Interesting that it's a flute instead of a whistle, though. Mm-hmm. Or that's what they call it. I don't know. Anyway. There's,
again, an exclamation point in the Japanese title.
Oh, yes. They love their exclamation points. All right. So, we have Ash and company approaching a bridge, and we have Team Rocket hanging underneath with a cage. So, the cage is kind of connected to the bridge, and they're going to make a hole in the bridge so that Ash and everybody falls into the cage part. However, while they're dancing on the cage in their excitement for their very brilliant plan, the bridge falls apart, and they wash out pretty early in the episode. And Team Rocket's splashing off again. I don't think it dings. They just ding. Wash away.
I ding. I don't care if they ding, I ding.
So that was amusing. And Ash and company find a broken bridge and can't figure out how to get across. I just want to say, they have water Pokemon. It's not that far. They also have more than one Pokemon that can fly.
Flying, yes, but isn't it like a really deep canyon?
No. I don't think so.
Sure?
Yeah, it was not like a... It wasn't like the bridge in the Heracross episode. Okay. I don't know. It seemed like they had some other options. You know, for example, once again, not using Charizard. While they're trying to figure this out, they hear a whistle, and a girl flies over to them on a swing that's tied to ropes carried by six Ledyba. And it's really funny, too, because Ash uses the Pokedex on Ledyba, and the Pokedex says its stuff, but then Brock acts like the Pokedex and speaks about the girl, giving information on how beautiful she is. And it was pretty funny.
Yep.
So when they call out, she blows the whistle and gives commands to the Ledyba to land. Ash asks Misty why she isn't starting to bug out about the bug Pokemon, but Misty thinks these ones are cute. Which is fair, as ladybugs and butterflies aren't often bugs people are scared of when they are scared of bugs.
Yeah, but I used to like them to land on me and stuff, and I'm like, they're pretty. They don't need to touch me, but they're pretty.
Even butterflies?
Yeah, they leave black stuff on me. I don't know what it is.
Meanwhile, I had a spider crawling, or a jumping spider crawling on me in the pool, and I'm like, look at this, guys, this is cool.
I sometimes like butterflies to land on me. One landed on my head once. That was fun. It was big. It was a special thing, though.
Yeah, at the zoo? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, this still doesn't explain why Venonat, or the claim that Venonat isn't even a bug Pokemon, works. And also, Misty thinks Tentacruel are cute, so... Misty has some weird issues. But she has a funny line, too, where she's like, the only thing bugging her right now is Brock. Mm-hmm. Not the Ledyba. The girl introduces herself as Ariel, and she carries them all over one at a time, using her swing and Ledyba. Then they end up at an apple orchard, and when they ask why she needed to come, a farmer comes by and asks if she's all set. She invites the gang to watch her work, and Ash suspects she is going to use her Ledyba. No, really, Ash. Like, come on. Anyway, The Letiba are used to pollinate the orchard. Ash sends Heracross to help, and Heracross latches onto a tree and starts feeding the sap.
To a distracted Pokemon.
Correct.
Not distracted from battle, but distracted.
Yeah, we're going to have a... We get a few distracted Pokemon stuff. Ariel explains that her whistle helps her command the Letiba, and when Ash asks to use it, she explains that it has been passed down for generations, and so no one else is allowed to touch it. Misty wants one for Psyduck to command him, since he's always annoying her. Team Rocket decides to steal the whistle to get the Letiba, and they pose as antique experts and study the whistle, and then they steal it. And here we get an interesting intro again. And I particularly like this one because of James' rhyme with whistle. But it goes like...
Prepare for trouble, it's Team Rocket's whistle.
Make it double, that's rocket, not missile. Team Rocket uses the whistle to get the Letiba as they fly off in their balloon. But the Letiba just watch with adorable huge eyes. Team Rocket is so mad that it doesn't work, since they haven't trained with it, and so they send in Lickitung to use Supersonic, which hurts everyone's ears and confuses the Letiba so they don't listen to anything. Team Rocket decides they'll take Pikachu, but Ash just sends Pikachu to electrify them, which pops the balloon, and Team Rocket is blasting off again! Ding! But the shock also scares off the Letiba, so everyone goes out looking for Letiba. Brock is ready to help and uses Zubat to hopefully have Supersonic bring in Letiba, but it just brings a bunch of Golbat toward them instead. Also, the music in this part of the episode is one of the Johto route themes, which I thought was cool, that we're getting some of the Johto game music now. And Ariel figures they might be near flowers somewhere, and so Ash brings out Heracross to sniff out some flowers and charges forward after him as he's sniffing and then latches onto a tree.
Dude, distracted Pokemon forever.
Yep. Then we cut to Team Rocket, and they still have the whistle. Meowth tries blowing it, but it does nothing, until Jesse pulls out Arbok. Then Arbok listens to Meowth, so then they see the Letiba, and Meowth has Arbok dig underground and round up the Letiba. Then hanging off ropes on the Letiba, they try and tell them to take them to Ash, but instead, they fly off after letting off a lot of orange pollen or something, and are not listening to Team Rocket. Ariel thinks the Letiba will never listen to her without the whistle, but the gang tell her she's wrong. Ash explains that her raising them since they were little is what actually counts. The whistle doesn't matter, and we get some flashback to her raising them, like a bunch of little scenes of her taking care of them and stuff. Mm-hmm. Then Ariel smells the scent of the pollen they let loose, which is a scent that they give off when in danger. And so they track down the Letiba and Team Rocket. James catches the gang in a net when they find them, and then he once again gets eaten by Victory Bell when he sends him out. And Jesse sends out Lickitung while Arbok is wrapped around a tree and the ropes tied to Letiba to keep them from escaping. And here is where I found something interesting while looking up some info for this episode on Bulbapedia. Apparently, in this particular episode, James is just groaning while Victory Bell's on top of him, according to the captions. But he's not saying anything. It's all gibberish. Only isn't. Well, in the original version. The one we have, it is just nothing. But in the original version of the episode, it almost sounds like he's talking, but there's no, like, it's hard, you can't understand it. Unless you play it backwards. It was discovered that it's the voice actor saying something that was a jab at the people running the company who were putting the show out in America because they were upset over some monetary issues and stuff. Like, he was losing a lot of money based off of a change in some policy or something. And the actor even confirmed it. So yeah, he had a whole thing they said and then they played it backwards, but then he had to actually pay to have it re-recorded so that we could have the version we have now. So anyway, Ariel calls out to the Letiba to help her while Lickitung and Victory Bell are beating them all up in the net. The Letiba get angry and rush in to drive the enemy Pokemon away. Then Ash has Bulbasaur razor leaf them out of the net. And then Letiba knock Team Rocket away, and so for the third time they're off. And this time they are buzzing off again. Ding!
Isn't there a thing for their outros?
Yep. Ariel learns that Letiba listens without the whistle, and that's that. Then they all take off and say goodbye. And our Who's That Pokemon this time is Blissey! So, We had Broken Bridges for our tallies.
Oh, yeah.
One, because they ruined the bridge right at the beginning of the episode. Our We're Off Again tally is two, because out of the three times that they're off again, only one of them they blasted off. We had Splashing Off and Buzzing Off. We had a Babysitting Brock moment where Misty shoves Brock's face back when he's going for Ariel.
Because he sticks his face way out.
Yeah. And then we have three distracted Pokemon. Heracross twice. When he goes to help pollinate, he eats sap. When he's sniffing his way towards them, he's sniffing his way towards more sap. And Victory Bell eats James. And Interesting Intro, which we read for you. So those are our new... That's our tallies for that episode. And now, ranking time.
I don't know. I made a suggestion last time, so now it's your turn.
Okay. I like Letiba. I did like some of the antics and stuff, but it's not like a stellar episode for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel... I think I liked it better than the Little Bighorn, which was the Stantler one.
The Stantler one?
Yeah, remember the Stantler episode with Brock and Stantler? So... Yeah, I'd either put it, like, below Don't Touch That Dial, which is the first episode.
I think I agree with that.
Yeah, okay, cool. Let's put it there. And then, before we get to the actual normal anime episode, we had a Pikachu short! And this one is called Slow King's Day, and it's the same Slow King from the Pokemon 2000 movie. Yeah, it just goes through a day of his life on that island.
It was funny.
So there's not a whole lot to say about it, but it was a really fun episode to watch. It was all in Japanese the way we watched it, which was also actually a lot of fun since we're trying to learn Japanese, so we actually recognize some of the things they were saying. Including when at the end when he says oyasumi, which means good night, which we like to say every night anyway.
Yeah, it was just an interesting thing. Like every time he'd do something, like a bunch of kids in background or whatever as part of the episode would shout words or something. It was so interesting and fun to watch.
I think. In fact, all the kids, almost all the kids, will say oyasumi when we go to bed because they've learned that. And so when they heard it in the show, they actually recognized it to themselves, which was really fun.
I think he said Ohio in the morning too.
I think so. And I knew the Matashita, which is see you tomorrow, and Tomodachi.
Friend.
We both recognized because she has a book about being a friend. That's in English and Japanese. You read it backwards. Yeah, it's called, like, My Friend is Coming to See Me or something.
Where are you going to see my friend?
Oh, where are you title. Going to see my friend? Yeah.
Because that question is asked on every page.
Yep. That's really fun. And we didn't know Asa was mourning, but we had discussed it during our Japanese lessons that it must have something to do with mourning, because we had learned that my Asa was every morning, while my Aban was every night.
Mm-hmm.
So we assumed Asa must mean morning.
And Asa Gohan is breakfast.
And Asa Gohan was breakfast, while Ban Gohan and was supper. And we knew Kon Banwa is good evening, so that also lends into the whole thing. And Gohan was also rice, which I had learned before or read somewhere that it could just be mean meal then, because rice was a common meal.
Mm-hmm.
We even get a glimpse of the other three islands at one point that have the legendary birds on it. As the Slow King watches the sunset towards the end. But at the beginning, he gets a coconut for breakfast, and he visits his seal friend, that's the word Tomodachi was used, in the ocean, and eventually he returns to his cave and goes to sleep. So it really has no significance to the plot of the movie or the show at all, but we all enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we go on to Ignorance is Blissy, Season 3, Episode 13, or Happinasu no Happy Nasu, which is Happina's happy nurse. So, Ash and company find a Pokemon Center late at night, and they are tired and hungry. Hungry? Them? Never.
I mean, to be... Well, no, Brock is always cooking up food, never mind.
It turns out to be locked, so they knock a few times, and then a Blissey opens the door and knocks Ash to the ground by accident, like when they open the door.
Mm-hmm.
It wears an interesting gold necklace, the Blissey does, while also wearing a normal Chansey nurse gear. Blissey takes them inside to what looks like a restaurant, And the Blissey goes into the kitchen and makes food and stacks all the trays on top of one another. The gang flees because it is about to fall and Blissey won't stop. Ash falls and ends up covered in food. And at this moment, we zoom, like, way out of the Pokemon Center as he yells, as just to show that he was getting clobbered by the trays. So then Ash is taking a bath to clean up from all the food, and Blissey comes in to help wash Ash's back, which he's grateful for until Blissey uses an industrial scrubbing broom and scratches up Ash's back pretty bad, which we then zoom out from the Pokemon Center again as Ash cries out in pain. So then Ash is laying in bed, and Blissey is getting something to clean Ash's wound. It is rubbing alcohol, and we zoom out again as Ash cries out in pain again.
Poor Ash.
Yes, poor Ash, and it was a very amusing running gag at the beginning. Then we see Joy walking along in her jammies, and she had earplugs in while she was sleeping, apparently. She wants to check in on Blissey and see if anything happened while she was sleeping, and she finds Ash covered in bandages from head to toe, implying that things must have continued to happen to him from Blissey trying to help. We zoom out of the center again, and this time it's Joy screaming in the shock of everything.
I could see the bandages covering him from head to toe to mean that he got hurt further, but when I saw it, I thought that she just covered him from head to toe for no reason.
Oh, it could be. So, during all of this, Ash had been really cool about Blissey trying to help by saying, like, I know that was an accident and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And now that Joy's in the picture, she hopes Ash can be understanding that Blissey was trying to help, but he already knows that. And then he simply asks, kindly, if Blissey could maybe help a little less. And Joy then says she understands how Ash might feel, but Blissey's heart is always in the right place. So she's, like, being defensive over Blissey when Blissey is a problem, and Ash has been super kind about it, and just like, hey, just, you know, maybe she could not help as much right now.
Yeah.
So it was kind of annoying, because she made it out like he was being a jerk or something.
Mm-hmm.
Not that she was getting mad at him, but just, like, yeah, painting him poorly. And really, a person or Pokemon's heart being in the right place only counts for so much. I don't think if a surgeon accidentally severed an artery killing a patient that we would take comfort in the person's heart being in the right place, you know? They were just trying to help. Yeah, they were, but they killed them in the process instead.
And I mean, that's kind of where it was heading with Blissey.
Right?
It got from spilling food on him to him being wrapped from head to toe.
Yep. And of course, to make it even more annoying, Brock is 100% on Joy's side, because he's Brock and she's a nurse Joy. Ash and Co. go to bed hungry, and when we cut to Team Rocket, who is also hungry, we find they plan to sneak into the Pokemon Center to steal food. Everything is all quiet, and only Meowth finds a little tiny bit of food, and he runs off with it since Jesse and James try to take it.
Of course.
Of course. As they wander the dark hallways, Jesse runs into Blissey. Blissey is super excited and tackles Jesse as she tries to flee, but then Jesse sees the necklace. And Jesse recognizes her old friend and holds up a piece that fits with the necklace, making it whole. Jesse and her were friends long ago when Jesse had dreams of becoming a nurse, but she was told by admissions or something that it would be extremely hard for her. Now, I have to wonder, did Jesse have dreams to become a nurse because she is also a Nurse Joy clone? And she's just a defective one? I mean, her hair is close to the Joy color hair.
She dressed up as Joy once, didn't she?
Yep, and she pretended to be, did a very convincing job at sounding like Joy when she was talking to Professor Elm when they stole Totodile.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying she might be a Joy clone if we believe in Joy clones. And not just weird family resemblance, even when not blood related.
I think that makes him a clone.
I think I'm a clone now. There's always two of me just hanging around.
Or maybe. Somehow, they both got split up. So all the Nurse Joys are actually like sisters. But they all got split up for adoption. And then now they're getting related, not blood related. And maybe Jesse was like the last kid or something, so she turned out weird.
Maybe. I think Jenny's and Joy's are clones. Because remember that Spinarak Jenny was a descendant. Her ancestor was just like her.
Yeah, maybe they're just clones.
Anyway, Jesse finds a thing for a nursing school that has a Chansey on the cover of the, like, the brochure or whatever. So she decides she will go there, and the admission guy says that's no place for you. But Jesse can fit in anywhere. But, yeah, having the cover show Chansey suggests that it's a place for Chansey to learn to be nurses. Like, it's where all the Chansey learn to go help the Joys or something.
Yep.
So then we cut to school, and the teacher... To the school that Jesse decides to go to, and the teacher is sure with hard work, each of them can become a Pokemon nurse. And the Chansey all say, Chansey! And Jesse says, Jesse! it turns out she's good at wrapping bandages, and a different Chansey is making a mess of it, so Jesse helps her. Grateful, Chansey wants to eat lunch with Jesse and spills it all over her. Then Jesse also helps Chansey turn the book the correct way to read at one point, as we're getting, like, more of this backstory. And then the Chansey are learning to use their sing technique to put their patients to sleep so they can rest. Jesse passes out as all the others sing, because sing does put people to sleep in the anime, as we've learned with Jigglypuff. Because
the teacher's wearing headphones.
Was she?
The teacher, yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
Yep.
I mean, that makes sense, but I did not notice.
I don't know if headphones is the right one.
Earmuffs.
Earmuffs.
Like they wear in the class in the herbology class or whatever in Harry Potter. With the mandrakes. Unfortunately, Jessie is woken by her Chansey friend and they see the teacher yelling, getting after her for falling asleep. Jessie is frustrated because she isn't a Chansey, so of course the sing put her to sleep. Jessie realizes she just can't cut it and she has to leave the school. Then we see a weird ritual with chanting Chansey getting their nurse caps and necklace from a nurse Joy. Like, it seemed almost cultish. I don't know.
It really did. They were holding candles and stuff and everything.
Yeah. Then Chansey, the one that Jesse keeps helping, races to catch up to Jesse, and she tries to give Jesse the cap, but Jesse won't take it because it doesn't belong to her. And that's when Chansey breaks the necklace and gives half of it to Jesse. And that's their story. So Team Rocket is hungry, and now the Chansey, who apparently evolved into Blissey by this point, helps them steal all the food out of the center. All of it. Which is a ton. As they leave carrying the food, Jesse feels bad because it was way too much food for them to eat. The next morning, Ash and company are surprised that there is hardly anything to eat, and Nurse Joy is shocked to find the pantry empty, and so then they look at the security tapes to find out that Blissey stole it all. This could end Blissey's career, and Jesse is spying on the situation, and Jesse feels super bad. So, then they get the great idea to return the food and pretend they tricked Blissey. This would save the Pokemon from punishment and also up their reputation. So they use megaphones to announce they dropped the food they stole by accident.
And when they drop the food, of course, Ash and Co. believes them because they are idiots.
Yep. And then we have an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble, you little nurse.
You make it double, we'll make it worse. And so then they reveal themselves. Joy thinks they tricked Blissey, and Meowth mentions them having a clever plan that they can't reveal. Ash is super angry, and he's also really hungry. Team Rocket want Pokemon in exchange, of course, but then Blissey shows up and starts happily rushing over to Jesse. To save her friend, Jesse sends her two Pokemon to attack Blissey, and Blissey gets beat up pretty bad. And Jesse gets after her Pokemon for not doing it right, as they had planned, because they're supposed to just pretend to hurt her. So then the Pokemon fight and do it super gently, and it's hilarious.
It is really funny.
Because they come in all hot and like really ready, and like, tap. Blissey is still wanting to be with her friend and having no idea what Jesse is up to. So they fire rockets at Blissey and then taunt the twerps for letting Blissey battle on its own. Like, really? You're gonna not help out? So then they use a machine to grab Pikachu and he electrifies them, which doesn't usually work, but it must have been part of this plan. So then Blissey finally catches on with a nod from Jesse and Ash brings out his Pokemon to attack and Team Rocket is excited and ready to be attacked. And then a razor leaf from Chikorita pops the balloon and sends them blasting off again! Ding. Ding! Blissey makes food and successfully carries it in, and everyone gets to eat. And in this episode, who's that Pokemon is? Togepi! Who's That Pokemon is not the featured Pokemon in the following episode, because the following episode has a Pokemon we've already met before. And it's Ruby's favorite.
So they're just like, now that we got you all excited and hoping Togepi's starred, we're gonna change it to Bellsprout.
But before we get to that, tally time! So, we only got a couple tallies this time. One, babysitting Brock. Misty does pull Brock away by his ear as he's flirting with Joy. And we had the interesting intro, which we read for you, or quoted for you. So now ranking. Where do we want to rank Ignorance is Blissy?
I enjoyed it. I like backstory things.
Getting to, I mean, like, learning more about the characters?
Yeah. I think it's somewhere above Don't Touch That Dial. Maybe. I don't know if it's below Illusion Confusion. It might be.
The Hoodoo episode?
Yeah. What's under Illusion Confusion?
The Chikorita Rescue.
And what's above Togepi? Don't Touch That Dial.
Snubble Snobbery.
And what's in between those?
Once in a Blue Moon.
Is that it?
Yep.
Think it's above Snubble Snobbery.
I agree with that. I do like backstory as well.
I don't know. I've gotten it pretty high. What do you think?
Well, do you think it was better or worse than Once in a Blue Moon, which we just covered a little bit ago?
I don't know. Somewhere around there, maybe.
Yeah, I think I'm going to put it... I think I would put it above Once in a Blue Moon.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe. No, probably not above Chikorita, because we got Chikorita in that one. And that's exact. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, let's do it right there.
All right, and then that brings us to About with Sprout, Season 3, Episode 14, or Daipinchi Maratsubomi no To, or Big Pinch Maratsubomi Tower. So, we're finally in, or at least on the outskirts of, Violet City.
But I'm sorry, the show, or this episode just goes downhill from here.
Yeah, my notes say this episode is Ruby's very favorite.
Well, who wrote the notes? You wrote the notes.
I think they just filled out themselves. I think it's even a favorite of the whole series up to this point.
I quit. Goodbye. I'm sorry, okay. Listeners, I know I'm your favorite, but goodbye.
Okay. Anyway. They're wondering where the gym might be as they pass by a building and Pikachu stops to smell the flowers. Misty thinks they could ask someone and Brock has a guidebook that says it's a little north. Pikachu gets caught up between two children that want to keep the Pikachu for themselves and they fight over him, pulling him one way and the other. One of these kids is named Zacky and he is a brat. Pulling on Pikachu's face, arms, ears, and whatnot is a recipe for pretty much one thing, and Ash knows this. So he hurries over to rescue the children and manages to get him away just in time so that only Ash gets electrocuted in another moment of friendly fire.
I would just say, if I was Ash, I'd just be like, he's gonna electrify you, you better stop, and go along with my day. Because it obviously doesn't kill you. They can suck it up.
And then he had a funny line, too. It may come as a shock, but this Pikachu is mine. The kids are disappointed, thinking Pikachu was a wild Pokemon, and a teacher comes out of the school. Turns out the school is a Pokemon Academy that is training up Pokemon trainers. And this is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, in the fanfiction and Discord roleplaying community, it is not uncommon for schools for Pokemon trainers to appear, because the idea of attending special schools is just fun. That's why we have so many stories like Harry Potter and Sky High and things like that, where there's special schools for people with abilities and stuff. Next, Scarlet and Violet clearly put a school for trainers as a prominent thing in the Paldea region, right? Like, they made it a big thing to have a school that you're part of.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's because there was more things like this in the anime and video game series or what, but that wasn't, like, the thing I knew Pokemon for was having, like, a school to belong to.
Yeah.
And then finally, Violet City in the video game actually had a Pokemon Academy. So this is actually a very game-accurate location, which makes that all the more fun.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I love it when the Pokemon media of, like, books and anime and game and all that thing, like, line up. Brock, of course, is instantly smitten with the teacher. And he shows just how desperate and foolish he is when the very odd principal of the school shows up spinning in a dance. And the teacher mentions the female teacher mentions she likes it, and so suddenly Brock is in a matching outfit and spinning as well.
Which is like a purple leotard thing, isn't it?
Something like that.
With a huge skirt. It's girly.
It's girly. Oh, and the principal's name is Earl Dervish. I don't know if that's his full name in the game for sure, or just in the anime, but I get the feeling that it's a play on Whirling Dervish, which would explain the constant spinning, because that's a thing. And he also looks just like the guy that runs the Pokemon Academy, or one of the guys, or whatever, in the video game. Because he almost has a Mario-ish look to him, and so did the sprite in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So again, more accuracy, which is fun.
Mario!
So anyway, Ash is asked to say some stuff to the students, because he's a Pokemon trainer, and they're all excited to have an actual trainer there. And when Ash is asked about battles, he brings up making it to the top 16 of the Indigo League. Instead of, you know, why not bring up the Orange League, being a champion of that, where he got a trophy? Anyway, they decide to all show off their Pokemon outside, and I think they bring all of them out this time, so we get Goldeen, Staryu, Zubat.
Didn't Zacky, when Ash mentioned that, be like, but that's not first, so who cares about you, or something?
He mentions that it's not impressive, which is why it would make more sense to have gone with the impressive score.
Yeah. I hate the brats that keep showing up.
Yeah. Anyway, they decide to all show off their Pokemon outside, and I think they bring all of the Pokemon out this time, out in the yard. So we do get to see Goldeen, Staryu, Zubat, and Charizard, along with those that showed up in the holiday shorts and everything. Although maybe the Vulpix might not have popped out. I don't know. Heracross once again tries to drain Bulbasaur and gets whipped with vines. Then Brock asks about the tall building in the distance, and the teacher explains that it is Sprout Tower, and that the beam moves back and forth. Ash wonders why the whole tower doesn't move then, and in response, the teacher says she is taking the class there that very day, and they can join. Which suggests that we'll get an answer to Ash's question. We do not. Zacky is trying to get Ash's Pikachu again, trying to convince it to leave Ash. Fat chance. And then Ash shows up and says he can't have Pikachu, and so Zacky throws an obnoxious tantrum and then steals one of Ash's Pokeballs. One of his empty ones, since his Pokemon are out and about. And he runs away to catch Pikachu, who has fled at this point. Ash says he'll go get Zacky and meet up with everyone at Sprout Tower. During all this, Chikorita is trying to get between Pikachu and Ash because she's still got that crush thing going on and is jealous of Pikachu and the attention he gets. In the woods, Zacky finds Pikachu and he throws it, but Pikachu ducks behind some bushes. Still, the ball hits, opens, and catches something, and Ash sees that. And Ash can't believe it! Darn straight, because it is impossible to catch other's Pokemon! We've already seen that and heard that, right?
Yep.
Then Ash chases Zacky and they both fall into a pit, and instantly Ash says, it can't be them! Because he's finally learned that if there's a pit trap, it means Team Rocket is around. The intro is kind of different.
Oh yes, it can, so prepare for trouble.
You fell for our plan, so make it double. So they still just have prepare for trouble and make it double.
Well, they did when you liked their rhyme once, like prepare for trouble, you something. Oh.
Snubble?
No. And then James rhymed it with missile. They just had prepare for trouble, make it double. And then
but they did different rhymes then.
Then they added a little in there.
Alright, well, maybe we can count this one, then. So they offer to free the kid if he gives over the Pikachu he caught, but instead Zacky throws out the Pokeball and tells Pikachu to use Thunderbolt, only it isn't Pikachu. Thank goodness. I was going to be so annoyed if he actually was able to catch Ash's Pikachu. Instead, Bellsprout appears!
As soon as it appeared, I hate brats, but I actually felt bad for him, the poor thing catching a Bellsprout.
You like the kid better than the Bellsprout? You have a problem. Alright. And James hilariously thinks Pikachu is sick. That's why it looks so weird. So then Team Rocket used their voice changer megaphones again, like they had way back in that Growlithe episode. And what is great is that Meowth is doing the talking, so it's Ash's voice, but talking with Meowth's accent, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it draws Pikachu close, but then real Ash in the pit shouts up and alerts Pikachu, so the net that was going to catch Pikachu misses and catches on a stump next to the pit instead, which then allows Ash and Zacky to climb out. Ash throws Pikachu into the air so he can zap Team Rocket from their treetop location and send them blasting off again. Ding. Back at Sprout Tower, Brock notes that the beam sways like a bell sprout, hence the name. But the teacher says another reason is because many trainers stop it. But the teacher says another reason for the name Sprout Tower is because many trainers stopping there are those going to the Johto League, and so they're at the town of their first gym and are just sprouts themselves, ready to grow. Also, we see Team Rocket come crashing down onto the roof of the tower. Team Rocket learns that Ash is on the way, so they prepare a new plan. Meanwhile, on the walk, Zaki is so disappointed about the Bellsprout and gets annoyed that Bellsprout is copying him.
Which was actually kind of funny, and so then I got upset at him for making fun of Bellsprout.
Well, that's good. Zaki wants Pikachu, not a wimpy little Bellsprout. Back at the tower, James has Weezing use smoke to make everyone think the building is on fire and gets them all out. Back on the walk, Zaki wants to trade Bellsprout for Pikachu, which will never happen. And so when Ash says no, the kid starts crying. Yeesh.
Yeah, he might be one of the more annoying brats. Actually, I don't know. They're all annoying. But I think I like Bellsprout better than brats.
I am glad my kiddos and I are Bellsprout fans, so we wouldn't whine like this kid.
Actually, to be fair, if I myself had a Bellsprout,
you do.
I would dominate, because I keep wrapping everyone up. My Bellsprout would be so powerful.
But then, Bellsprout does some silly wobbly head thing, trying to make Zaki laugh, because Bellsprout likes his new trainer. It works, but then Pikachu alerts everyone to the smoke, so they hurry forward, and Ash uses Squirtle and Misty uses Poliwag to try and water gun the fire down. But that doesn't seem to work, because there is no fire. Team Rocket invites them in, and it turns out that Team Rocket's Pokemon are sawing the pillar and have a rocket strapped on the top portion so they can blast the tower up into the sky, which feels like a very Team Rocket type plan.
Yeah.
They just want Pikachu, and so Pikachu gives himself up, quote unquote, and as soon as Jesse picks him up, electricity! But rubber gloves and boots keep them safe. So after Bellsprout gets Zaki's attention, Zaki has the Bellsprout use Razor Leaf to get the remote away, and Squirtle, who is still out, helps with Water Gun, because they weren't allowed to pull out any Pokemon, otherwise they're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So then Team Rocket climb on the rocket to get away after recalling their Pokemon. There is a manual override, and so the whole tower begins to lift off. Bulbasaur and Bellsprout both use Razor Leaf attacks to cut ropes, freeing Pikachu and cutting the rocket off the tower. So Team Rocket go flying off on the rocket, and the tower falls perfectly back onto the rest of its pillar and still sways and remains upright? None of that makes any sense. Zaki now loves Bellsprout. Team Rocket find it peaceful to ride their rocket and start their usual Team Rocket exit stuff. Then the rocket explodes, and they are blasting off again! Ding! So we had two blast-offs this episode. Brock almost stays behind with this teacher lady, but finds out he would be teaching dance with Earl Dervish. So they all leave, and now, finally, Ash gets to head to his first Johto gym. And this episode's Who's That Pokemon is Cleffa. And this one is extra interesting because it isn't filling in a gap of a Pokemon we met before, like Togepi did, or the Totodile with the second Chikorita episode. Like we had Totodile show up in Who's That Pokemon, mm-hmm. since we already met Totodile. And Togepi we've met forever ago, so having Togepi before this one was fine. But Cleffa we've never met, and is also not the featured Pokemon of the next episode.
Like, yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, but that's because the featured Pokemon next episode would probably be Pidgeot, and the only Johto Pokemon they use is Hoothoot, which we've also already met. Our tallies for this episode are only two again, and that's Friendly Fire, when he gets electrocuted by Pikachu, and Interesting Intro. Now, you made a suggestion last time, so it's my turn for this one, so...
Oh, no.
I think about with Sprout is definitely better than a sappy ending.
Which one's it? No! It has a punk kid, and the Bellsprout, it's at least below Don't Touch That Dial.
I agree. I would even put it under the Whistle Stop.
I think it could go above the Donphan one.
Yeah, the Donphan one was not my favorite. Yeah, I definitely think it goes in the bottom group here. So there's the Whistlestop, Little Big Horn, Flower Power, and Rollon Pokemon.
Yeah, actually, I want it right above Rollon Pokemon.
Okay. I'm very okay with this. Because there was a lot about it, and like, there was things I did. Like, the megaphone thing with the Ash actor speaking Meowth style was pretty cool. And I did enjoy Bellsprout, but this episode was not strong. So, alright. And then our final anime episode for this Routes Through Pokemon episode is Season 3, Episode 15, Fighting Flyer with Fire. Or, Kikyo Jimu, Ozoro no Tatakai. Or, Kikyo Jim, Sky Battle. I'm guessing Violet City is Kikyo.
Yeah, probably. When you said fighting flyer with fire, it sounded like you just kind of said fire weirdly the first time, but said fire twice.
Okay. I actually really like fighting flyer with fire is a funny pun, but I do really like the Japanese name of telling us the gym and then calling it Sky Battle, since it's the flying gym and they fight in the sky.
Yeah.
So, the gang arrives at the gym in Violet City, but they are interrupted from getting in by two very official-looking survey takers from the Pokemon Bureau.
They don't look official at all.
Brock thinks they look like movie theater ushers. This is clearly Jesse and James, but they claim they have to check to see if the Pokemon qualify, and they check Pikachu first and find it subpar, so it needs to be confiscated. None of that makes any sense, but whatever. It's a Jesse and James plan, so what do you expect? Then they get in their balloon, and that's when Ash figures out who they are, because he's slow. Mm-hmm. They immediately jump into their motto with an interesting intro.
He really is slow. He took how many episodes to get to Violet City? And then, yeah, his brain is also... Prepare for trouble, it's too late for you.
And make it double. We've got Pikachu.
I feel like in the intros, Jesse just says whatever she wants, and then James has to rhyme with it.
Pretty much. I mean, even the whole motto goes that way, really. But that seems very Jesse's style. Mm-hmm. Don't you think? Like, that's how she would behave.
That's why I'm saying that. I mean, you could think, oh, maybe they rehearsed it or something beforehand, but I think that's how it goes, because it just seems Jesse.
I agree. And so then Pikachu is trapped in his little glass thing again that they always use. Ash sends Heracross flying after them. But Meowth drops a jar of sap onto the ground, and so Heracross eats that instead in another moment of distracted Pokemon.
That was actually thinking on their part, though.
It really was. But then a guy hang glides by and sends his Hoot Hoot to grab Pikachu, and Misty is sure he's a Pokemon thief too! But he's not. Jesse has Arbok damage the glider, and so the guy starts to crash. But he jumps off and releases his Pidgeot and rides that instead. And then he has Pidgeot destroy the balloon and... Team Rocket's blasting off again! Ding. Ding! The guy lands and returns Pikachu. Here we have Ash bring up his Pidgeot and the battle with the Fearow from the Pallet Party Panic episode that started off the Orange Islands. The one, you know, he didn't come back and visit, like he said. He claims that he will visit again someday. Just now he does again. Sure you will, Ash. Sure. Anyway. The two bond over the flying-type Pokemon, and that's because it turns out that this fellow is Faulkner, the flying-type gym leader. And Faulkner says something about electric-type not necessarily being a weakness for flying-type, which is very similar to something he says in the game. Then he reveals who he is, and they have an awkward elevator ride up to the roof of the gym where the arena is. He says he doesn't usually make friends with those coming to challenge him before they do so. They agree to a battle, 3v3, like the anime likes to do. Mm-hmm. Ash starts with Chikorita. I mean, that's what I had for this gym. Sure. But, Ash, you know you have much better options, right?
Well, technically, we could have traded ourselves our Pokemon from before, and then we would have had better options for this gym, too.
Chikorita cuddles, of course, and then Faulkner gives Ash a hard time for picking a type that's weak against flying type. And this is weird, because he had just given us a statement about electric and flying not necessarily being opposed, right? And he was annoyed when people were like, oh, they're always weak to electric. So why is he doing this? Anyway. Ash kind of calls him on that. Ash actually kind of calls him on that, too, which was kind of cool to, like, call him on his hypocrisy-ish point there. Mm-hmm. All that being said, Hoot Hoot still easily defeats Chikorita. So then Ash brings in his electric Pokemon, Pikachu, who does defeat Hoot Hoot. So then Faulkner has Dodrio to come into a fight, which is a flying-type Pokemon, but at least in here they say it doesn't fly. But apparently it jumps high enough that it is like it's flying, just like how Superman originally flew in his original creation. He didn't actually fly, he just jumped really high and far. Anyway, they both use a lot of agility against one another and stuff, and then Pikachu wins that round, too. But Pikachu is exhausted, and his attacks can't reach Faulkner's final Pokemon, Pidgeot. So finally, Ash recalls Pikachu, despite Pikachu trying to stay into battle. And who does Ash bring? Charizard! I mean, the episode was called Fighting Flyer with Fire, so kind of expected that. It's an intense battle, though. But in the end, Ash wins. He gains the Zephyr Badge, and now both the anime and manga are caught up to where we are in the game. So next episode, Ruby and I will finally get to make the journey to the second gym in the video games. Woohoo!
Yay!
And this week's Who's That Pokemon is Meryl, who we also know, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's not the featured one next time.
Mm-hmm.
So our final tallies for this, and then ranking. So, we had an interesting intro, which we said for you, and we had two moments of distracted Pokemon. Heracross gets distracted by a clever sap trap by Team Rocket, and Chikorita cuddles Ash instead of going into combat right away.
Mm-hmm. That checks out.
And so, our final tally, if I've counted everything correctly, we have one jumping Jigglypuff, which was the first episode. We have 9 babysitting Brocks. We have 15 interesting intros, 1 Jessie's hair, which I think we might expand to just Jessie's beauty or whatever, because she's always super concerned with a scratch on her face and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have 18 distracted Pokemon. We have 7 We're Off Again, where they say something other than blasting. We have 3 catching catchphrases. I don't think we got any new ones this time around. We got 4 friendly fires. We have 3 modified mottos, 2 broken bridges, 1 Dogebi trouble, 1 recurring rival with Gary showing up, 1 entertaining exit where Team Rocket leaves other than blasting off, 4 busted bots, 2 irritating interruptions where the motto gets interrupted, 2 gotta catch them all because we've caught 2 Pokemon total so far, and 1 Psyduck sighting. One time Psyduck gets out without permission. And that's where we're at for that now. Episode ranking.
Well, it's cool because we got another gym. So it's probably above Snubble Snobbery, maybe.
It was a fun episode. There was some good action, some good battling, which is nice to have.
I could say above Snubble Snobbery, right there.
Yeah, right under Once in a Blue Moon. Yeah, I'm down with that. All right, so our episode rankings now stand at the bottom is Roll-On Pokemon at number 15, then About With Sprout, Flower Power, The Little Bighorn, The Whistle Stop. So that's, 2 of our episodes got underneath Don't Touch That Dial this time around, and are in the bottom 5. Then we got Don't Touch That Dial, Snubble Snobbery, Fighting Flyer with Fire, Once in a Blue Moon, Ignorance is Blissy. Ooh, that's the highest one we have this week, I think. So our highest one is 6th place from these 5 episodes. Then we have the Chikorita Rescue, Illusion Confusion, Spinarak Attack, Double Trouble Header, and a Sappy Ending, which is the Heracross one. Alright, and that covers all of what we're going to take care of this week, and next week will be the video game again, which I'm excited about for sure. And so that just leaves Pokemon cards! Alright, so the pack I will be opening this week is a Crown Zenith with Zacian and Zamazenta on the front of the package.
I'm opening Twilight Masquerade, Scarlet and Violet, with a Blood Moon Ursaluna, I think.
Alright, so I have Seal, Water Pokemon. Thanks to its thick fat, cold seas don't bother it at all, but it gets tired pretty easily in warm waters.
I didn't think it was a polar bear.
I got a potion.
Cool.
I haven't seen one of those in a bit. I've got Aeron, metal type. It eats iron ore and sometimes railroad tracks to build up the steel armor that protects its body. Corphish, water type. No matter how dirty the water in the river, it will adapt and thrive. It has a strong will to survive. Energy search.
Oh, I I've seen that.
Ooh. Full art, or extended art, or whatever they're called. Soul Rock, fighting type. Ability, sun energy. Once during your turn, you may attach a psychic energy card from your discard pile to one of your Lunatone. When it rotates itself, it gives off light, similar to the sun, thus blinding its foes. And there's a bunch of Illumise, or there's an Illumise and Volbeep in the picture.
Ooh, that's cool.
Ooh, holy crap! What? And then I got a Pikachu with full art. Pikachu that can generate powerful electricity have cheek sacks that are extra soft and super stretchy.
Can I see? That's just like the one... Maybe not just like it. It looks a lot like it, if not just like the one that Bear has.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought somebody has an idea. But yeah, there's a bunch of other Pokemon on there too, like a Crobat and Zacian, I think it is. Whoever has the sword. And Inteleon, Sobble's final evolution. And then I got a Psychic Energy. Oh, and more stuff. Sorry. This is one of those that has more stuff after the energy. I got Laron, which evolves from Aeron, Metal type. Laron live in mountains brimming with spring water and iron ore. These Pokemon often came into conflicts with humans in the past. And then a supporter card, Friends in Sinnoh. Oh, still have them. And Gloom, grass type. Its pistils exude an incredibly foul odor. The horrid stench can cause fainting at a distance of 1.25 miles. It's a good distance. Yeah, and that's mud.
Are you sure you don't got another full art card in there?
Yeah, I was really surprised at the two full arts.
All right, let's see. My first card is Kadabra, evolves from Abra, psychic type. Using its psychic power, Kadabra levitates as it sleeps. It uses its springy tail as a pillow.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm. Haluca, fighting type. Haluca live quietly without flocking together. They fight constantly with their natural enemies, noisy groups of primate. Tangra growth evolves from Tangla, grass type. Ability, thicket body. This Pokemon takes 30 less damage from attacks after applying weakness and resistance. Tangle growth has two arms that it can extend as it pleases. Recent research has shown that these arms are in fact bundles of vines.
Alright, I know I'm the Donna fan guy instead of Don fan, but can you tell me where the L is in that Pokemon's name?
There is no L.
So, not Tangle Growth.
Tangle Growth. Huh. Venipede, dark type. Venipede and Sizzlipede are similar species, but when the two meet, a huge fight ensues. Darumaka evolves from Darumaka.
Darumaka.
Darumaka, yes. Fighting type. The thick arms of this hot-blooded Pokemon can deliver punches capable of obliterating a dump truck. Supporter trainer, Carmine. Ooh, a Swanna evolves from Ducklet. Normal type. It's said that many artists have taken inspiration from the sight of a Swanna performing a beautiful dance in the light of dawn. Like, artists take, or like Pokemon sculptors have inspiration from the glass onyx.
Oh, yeah. Crystal onyx.
Crystal onyx, yes. My reverse holo is Volbeat, grass type. It flashes the light on its rear to communicate with other Volbeat. It loves the sweet aroma given off by Illumis. It's funny that it flashes its light. It's just like a... Firefly.
Yep, and it was also hanging out with my Solra.
Another reverse holo, Slugma, fire type. It's said that in ancient times, when volcanoes were more active, there were many more Slugma than there are now. My rare is Tinglu, fighting type. It slowly brings its exceedingly heavy head down upon the ground, splitting the earth open with huge fissures that run over 160 feet deep. And then an electric energy.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Routes Through Pokemon is a Hunterfield Institute production. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, and other... No, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and other places where podcasts show up. So you can like, subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff there. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you enjoy. Correct us on our stupid pronunciations and other mistakes we make. And if we got our counts wrong, let us know that too. And if you have a good name for some of the tallies that we need better names for, go ahead and chime in. You can also get a hold of us at hunterfieldmanor@gmail.com. I'm also frequently on the Routes Through Pokemon Facebook page. I'm on X at hunterfieldinns, where I post a lot there too, including our Who's That Pokemon segment, where every week highlight a Pokemon. And I'm also on Instagram at kinetic_card. And I think that might be it. Next week, we will be covering Ruby and I's journey through the Gold and Silver and Crystal games as we try to take on the second gym in Azalea Town. So we're definitely looking forward to getting further in the game and talking about that. So we will catch you on the next route. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Part 17. Spear Me, the Drama. Mizu's eyes flashed wide in surprise at appearing right in front of a missile. The object's scream sounded very bird-like, and, just before it struck the horsey, she could tell that it was a Pokemon. Violet winced as her horsey took the full blow and was knocked aside.
Sorry!
The attacker curved upward into the air, causing a Zubat to quickly change direction, and then the creature shot back down to continue its assault on Violet and her Pokemon.
Mizu, get up and hit it with your bubble attack!
The horsey bounced up and took aim and started spraying bubbles upward towards the bird. As they popped in the Pokemon's face, it veered off to the side and plowed into the ground. Violet and Mizu were sprayed by chunks of dirt from where the bird Pokemon had crashed. It flapped its wings wildly and its talons scraped and scratched as it worked to pull its beak out. Once free, the Spearow raised its beak to the sky and gave out a loud victory cry. Not thrilled with all the noise again, Violet winced and hissed a command to her horsey.
Mizu, quick! Quiet it down with a bubble!
The horsey obeyed immediately and sent a stream of bubbles toward the Spearow. The bird choked on the sudden suds and flapped up into the air. It dove toward Mizu, who launched another bubble attack, but this time the Spearow managed to scratch up the horsey with its beak.
Are you doing okay, Mizu?
The horsey gave a determined snort and positioned itself for another attack as the Spearow turned and sort of growled at the water Pokemon.
All right, let him have it!
One more shot of bubbles to the face seemed to annoy the Spearow, and it flapped its wings and started to rise back into the air. But slower, and the wings were not flapping at a steady pace.
I think we have him, Mizu. Hold back.
The Spearow locked its eyes on Mizu and seemed ready to strike again, but Violet had pulled out an empty Pokeball and was ready to launch it. The bird dove toward its target and Violet tossed the ball. Mizu could see the Spearow coming closer and closer, and finally she closed her eyes tight, bracing for the collision, and then snap! The Pokeball collided with the Spearow and sucked the bird inside before landing on the ground next to Mizu. The light flashed once, and only once, before the telltale click signaled Violet's second capture. The girl ran forward and picked up the Pokeball.
We did it, Mizu!
Violet beamed down at her partner, who looked back up just as pleased, but a little exhausted.
You did great. Why don't you get some rest now?
She aimed Mizu's Pokeball at her, and the horsey vanished inside. Before taking off, Violet put the Pokeball with the newly captured Pokemon away before it too got lost due to a freak appearance of a Bellsprout or something like what happened to her Clefairy. Once everything was settled, she continued to trek toward Pewter City and decided to bring out Lucky for some company since the Zubat would probably be best suited for an evening stroll. The rest of the journey came without any real incident. There had been an encounter with a Pidgey at one point, but she had it battered too badly that it fled before she could try and capture it. Once she arrived in town, she headed straight for the Pokemon Center and turned in her Pokemon to get refreshed, and then she acquired a room so she could get some rest as well. After all, she and her Pokemon would want to be in tip-top shape to challenge Brock, the Pewter City gym leader. The next morning, Violet rushed back to the Pokemon Center counter and collected her four Pokeballs. She was bouncing with excitement as she gathered her companions. She was so close to finally taking on her first gym, and she really wanted to win. She needed to collect all 8 badges across the land to earn the right to face the Elite Four. Walking through town, she noticed a museum along the way, and she looked to Mizu.
That looks interesting. Maybe we should check it out after the battle.
Mizu sounded off in agreement. With her eyes on the museum and her mind on the upcoming gym battle, Violet did not notice the person coming around the corner of the Pewter City gym building. She and the person collided hard, butting heads and falling to the ground.
Ow! Watch where you're going! Watch where I'm going!
Sitting on the ground right across from Violet was the last person she wanted to see. Well, maybe not the last, but she wasn't far from the bottom. It was the girl with the pink hair who had nearly killed her in Mount Moon. To be continued.